This station, in cooperation with the Federal Civil Defense Administration, brings you by transcription, This is Civil Defense.
When you've been a railroad man as long as I have, even if you've retired, it's pretty hard to stay away from the sights and sounds you've lived with most of your life. You tell yourself again and again your traveling days ought to be over and that it's time to settle down and rest. I'd told myself all right, but here I was anyhow, on board a train for the second time in a week. This time heading back home after a short trip to San Francisco. There's no getting around it either. San Francisco's a wonderful place. There's something about the harbor's sounds and the smells, the fog that drifts in over the bay, the ships passing silently through the Golden Gate, many of them a lifeline for our boys in Korea. But I'm a railroad man, or was, and when I hear a train whistle... Well, here I was heading back home. Home to the heart of America, sort of, where the East merges into the West. Until I'd been aboard the train for several hours that I saw Jan and Robbie Boyd.
Jan! Robbie!
Let me look at you. My gosh, I haven't seen you for 2 years.
Uncle Bill Kelly. Gosh, this is a pleasant surprise.
Oh, it certainly is. How are you? Oh, you look wonderful. How come you're not in your conductor's uniform? Isn't this your train?
I've gone on the retired list. But speaking of uniforms, I see you're in the Army, Robbie.
Yeah, Medical Corps.
He just got back from Korea.
Say, did you now? Well, I'm certainly glad that you're
all... Second call for dinner. Dining car forward. Second call for dinner.
Say, how about having dinner with me?
Of course.
Well, Robbie, how'd you leave Korea? Now, what's that door?
With a whole skin, anyway. I was lucky.
Made any plans?
Not exactly. Maybe look into my old job if it's still there.
Here's the diner. Why do I get so hungry when I ride the train?
And now, Robbie and Jan, let's have a talk.
You sound just like you used to when I was a little girl. Remember how I used to call you Uncle Bill Kelly, my most favorite conductor?
Well, you sound very serious. Talk about what, sir?
You and Jan, and Dick and little Janet.
That's a favorite topic of mine. About all I thought about overseas, my own complete little world.
That sounds good, Robbie, and I know how you feel. But, of course, that isn't quite the whole picture.
What do you mean?
Well, simply that there no longer are complete little worlds. We all depend on each other, from the farmer who raises the food to the city dweller who makes the tools and the power for the farmer to the fighter who protects the far frontier in Asia. The private world has vanished. Robbie, I'm going to suggest a civilian duty for you to take up.
What is it?
Well, you are going to stay in our town, aren't you?
If I can.
Oh, of course we will. It's home.
And listen, I know a man who needs help from someone with exactly your qualifications. As a member of the Medical Corps, you've handled casualties. You've organized units for rescue. You've been under fire and bombs yourself. You've kept
records.
But
I don't understand.
Jan will. She's worked with civil defense.
Civil defense? But, Lord, do you take that seriously? Civil defense in our town? A bunch of people playing at being volunteer firemen or peering through thick glasses to watch for bombers in Wyoming? Ladies sewing circles, knitting mittens that would never fit a human hand? Playing at war.
Oh, Robbie.
The time may come, Robbie, when we'll get down on our knees and thank God we trained those volunteers. I'm one of them.
Well, I'm sorry, Uncle Bill. It just struck me as funny. I've been through the real thing.
That's why we need you.
Well, what is it you think I should do?
Serve as a volunteer in civil defense. Mike Allen's looking for an assistant civil defense director for our city. It's an important job, but of course it's without pay. It could mean the fate of Jan, of Dickie, of little Janet, of you yourself, your neighbors. Your prestige will help civil defense.
Well, I'll think it over. Maybe I can help while getting settled into a steady job or a business of our own.
Thank you, Uncle Bill. Robbie's been through so much. Give him time. There, a kiss for my favorite conductor. Mm-hmm. Good night, Uncle Bill. We'll see you in the morning.
Good night. Well, that, I said, is that. I felt he wouldn't pitch into civil defense. He thought it was playing at war. Don't I wish it were?
Well, Jan, want to turn in?
I guess so.
I didn't mean to be rude, Uncle Bill, but, well, it's not for me, that's all. No matter what anybody says, this business of civilians defending their front yards is silly. And in Wyoming, too. I've been in the Army long enough to know.
I lay awake a while that night thinking about Jan and Robbie and the kids and wondering why. How people could be so blind to a danger that did come at Pearl Harbor and that someday could come again. And then, much later, I could never be quite sure whether I dozed off or not when it happened. All I do remember is a tearing sound of steel. Crash, an explosion, and then the screaming voices of hurt and terrified and dying people. Then I blacked out. A flashlight glaring at me. Then somebody pulled me through the window of an overturned coach, and I was looking into the drawn face of conductor George Everts. In the eerie, dim half-light of the dawn, I could make out some dark forms lying on the snow. I couldn't tell if they were dead or injured. Some of the cars had been crushed, and others were lying on their side. Snow still sifted down as though it was trying to cover the ugly scene.
Bill, you heard?
I don't think so, George. My God, what happened?
We crashed into the rear of number 24. With all this snow, well, I don't know just what happened.
I'll be okay, George. I'll help. How many?
Don't know yet, Bill. 9 bodies so far. I think help's coming.
What kind of help?
There's some kind of volunteer outfit from the nearest town on the Utah-Wyoming border, about 17 miles. The Evanston-Wyoming Civil Defense, I think.
Thank God. They'll know what to do. Two injured, most of them seriously. 2 coaches crushed into a tangle. More people possibly trapped inside some overturned cars. And those lives depended upon a small trained corps of men and women from a town of less than 4,000 people. Civil defense volunteers who knew that their town had less than 1 chance in a million of being a target in a total war, but who for months had been preparing themselves. Trained men and women who'd be ready to help distant communities that might be targets of an enemy attack, or who would be equally prepared to speed to the rescue of their neighbors in any emergency. They came with bulldozers to bridge the deep canyon to reach the train. Engineering crews risked their own lives to save others. Trained mechanics enrolled in civil defense brought compressed air-cutting chisels to get into the wreckage. Acetylene torches would have spilled fuel oil. This was civil defense in action. Efficiently, quickly they worked, as though all this were only a routine assignment. I'll never forget those scenes. There must be words to describe them, but I'm only a conductor. If there are, well, I don't know them. I wouldn't know how to explain the way a smile came over the tear-stained face of a little girl as a civil defense worker reunited her with her frantic mother, or how to describe the look of gratitude on a woman's face when a doctor tells her that her little boy will be all right, thanks to some fast-acting first aid worker. Scenes like that were repeated many times over. More than 10 lives were saved that way. Food and blankets were supplied. Transportation to Evanston was arranged, and a hospital was set up in American Legion Hall. And at the impromptu dressing station beside the demolished train, I came upon Robbie, both legs broken. Jan wasn't there with him.
Bill, Uncle Bill, where's Jan?
Now, she'll be all right.
You're hiding something? Jan's dead. She's dead, I know she's
Please,
dead.
Robbie.
God, let me walk. Let me find her. I tried to crawl to her in the compartment. She was bleeding. She screamed. Uncle Bill, she was dying. Oh, Jan. Jan.
Doctor, could you...
I don't want morphine. No, please, no. I want Jan.
Robbie, feeling okay?
Two busted legs. Oh, I'm pretty good. Dickie's having a birthday.
So I hear. Driving you nuts?
No, Uncle Bill, I love it. Believe it or not, home with my family.
All of your family, thank God.
Mm-hmm. All of them. Jan told me, you know.
Told you what?
Well, how she'd have bled to death after they hauled me out of some silly kid in his teens still, I think. Hadn't pressed on that artery. Civil defense training, she said. That was kind of rubbing it in.
Kind of. Well, I'll be running along.
Just a moment. Do you think I could still fit into that job in civil defense back here when my legs heal? I kind of changed my mind.
I'm a sentimental old fool, I guess. But I couldn't say anything. I just shook Robbie's hand extra hard. He knew what I meant. Then, someplace far off, I heard a train whistle. To me, it's the link with all the sights and sounds of America. America, where liberty and freedom are as normal as the laughter of a child. America menaced by evil, vicious men, because the golden light of liberty will always be a threat to those who do their work with the powers of darkness. My traveling days are going to be over for a while, anyhow. I'm devoting full time to organizing that Civil Defense Transportation Corps in my area. We've all got to be ready. We've got to be sure the light never goes out.
This is Civil Defense, is brought to you by the Federal Civil Defense Administration. This program was written and directed by Jack Weir Lewis. It was produced and transcribed by the Rocky Mountain Radio Council.